Good morning. This is Alicia Bales in the studio for another special Monday morning open line show, this time with 4th District County Supervisor Dan Jurdy in the studio, who will be with us for the whole hour to talk about his work on the Board of Supervisors and issues facing Mendocino County. And this is the 4th Supervisor open line show that I've hosted this month. Last week, 2nd District Supervisor John McCowan was on the air. That was Tuesday night at 7. And just Friday at 11, John Hashak of the 3rd District was here. And on August 12th, 5th District Supervisor Ted Williams came into the Fort Bragg studio. That was at 11 o'clock. And I'm just revisiting that because you can go back and listen to all of those interviews on our jukebox page at kzyx.org, where we archive all of our local programming. And I'm currently working to schedule with 1st District Supervisor Carrie Brown to have her on the air in the next week or so, just to round out the series, have a complete set with all 5 supervisors. And it looks like we'll be talking with Supervisor Brown on September 2nd, that's Labor Day, I think, at 7 o'clock. So I just heard from her. This morning, I'm happy to welcome Supervisor Dan Jurdy to the Philo Studio. He's the representative of the 4th District, includes Fort Bragg, as well as the northern half of the Mendocino Coast to the Humboldt County line, plus the inland communities of Piercy, Leggett, and Branscombe. He joined the Board of Supervisors in 2013, and before that, he served on the Fort Bragg City Council for 14 years. Welcome, Supervisor Jurdy.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming in. So this is an open line show, and we'll open the phone lines around 11:20 for your calls. The number here in the studio is 895-2448, and we welcome you to call in with your questions and concerns for Supervisor Jurdy. But I'd like to start by talking just a little bit about your background. You have deep roots in Mendocino County. You've served in local government for decades. What motivates you, and after so many years as an elected representative here in Mendocino County, do you have any insights about how to be effective in
that
role?
Sure, we could go on to that for a couple hours. I'm one of those people who believes that the arc of history bends towards justice, and that it's really a matter of plodding away over time, and that you make change that way. And what better place to make change than in local government? I'm very happy to be involved in local government. I mean, it's so tangible. You can see the results. Whether it's a sidewalk that you helped get funded, or a street repaired, or a bike lane, I mean, those are all things that I could see tangibly in Fort Bragg that I had a hand in. And with the county, it's a broader array of areas that the county impacts people's lives. Hopefully, mostly in the positive. I'm sure we're going to end up talking about mental health services and how that impacts many people, not just the clients being served, but family members who are, you know, struggling with a family member and needing to receive some kind of help from government agencies. In our case, it's some of those services are delivered by nonprofits contracted by the County of Mendocino or by county employees themselves.
And so, yeah, we have a number of very hot issues in the county that are affecting people's daily lives. Mental health is one of them. Housing is one of them. Green energy and just cost of living here, wages, lots of different things. All of them seem to come down to the budget. So, and that's one of your big jobs as a county supervisor, is to work on that county budget. How did it go this time for the 2020 budget? What were some of your priorities, and were you able to achieve that?
Yeah, so I'll step back just a little bit. One of the issues that the county faced, and that we're still living with in a way, is the fact that the county had not maintained adequate reserves when the 2008 recession kicked in. And so none of the current supervisors were in office during those years when the county really should have been building up reserves. But for example, Supervisors McCowan and Brown came on the board in 2009 just as the crash is kicking in, and had to really make serious, significant cuts. The county had to eliminate 30% of county jobs, had to cut pay by 10%. In contrast, you know, I was in a local government, but the city of Fort Bragg, and during those years, we were building up reserves. And so, yes, we had to make cuts, but we only had to eliminate 14% of the city jobs. We were not required to cut pay. So when I joined the board in 2013, I think the other board members welcomed me because they knew that I wasn't going to that I was going to pay attention to the budget and not overspend, and they appreciated that. So the county has had a consistent path forward out of the recession of 2008 using one-time revenues for one-time expenses and not obligating ongoing expenses with one-time revenues, if that makes sense. And so that's allowed the county to build back reserves that it should have had before the 08 recession, and also fund services on an ongoing basis so that they're sustainable. We did, as you've covered through the other interviews, did finally get to the position where we could adopt a multi-year employment contract with the employees that restores salary and brings them up to market. So basically what that means is if you're a receptionist or administrative assistant working in Mendocino County, you're going to be paid very close to the average of the comparable county, the counties that we compare ourselves to, whether it's Nevada County, Humboldt, Lake, Sonoma, Napa, Yolo. So you'll be paid very, very close to that. And so I've also been entrusted by the board to for the last several years to serve on the county's retirement investment board. So I've really dug into trying to understand how the retirement system got to the position it's in, which it is, like most, it does have an unfunded liability, but also to dig into the reforms that the retirement board has made in recent years, before I was on the board and since, to try to put it in a better position so that going forward, it won't be increasing the deficits. It will be building out of that deficit position and be sustainable. So we've put together many reforms to the retirement system, as we have with the county budget. There's always more work to do, but I feel good about the progress that's been made.
And you famously rejected the board's raise that they gave themselves in 2017 to bring their own salaries up to parity. Now that the other county workers are coming up to parity, do you think you're going to keep that?
My point was that if county employees as a whole were out of market, that the supervisors should be out of market to the same extent. And so as the employees get closer to market, my salary would go closer to market in the same way.
Ah, what was the reaction when you did that by the other supervisors? Were they sheepish?
No, I mean, I think it's important to remember that this was actually a recommendation that came from the Human Resources Department. It wasn't a proposal developed by the supervisors. None of us saw it until the agenda was posted the Thursday before the Tuesday meeting. And it's not an item that we were allowed to discuss in closed session. So we were reacting to it on camera in front of everybody else together. And I don't know that had we had a chance legally to discuss it in closed session, it could have been that all five would have done the same thing that I did. But, I don't know. You can't go back in history.
Yeah. And you're not allowed to discuss it because of the Brown Act?
Yeah. It was just one of the many items that cannot be discussed in closed session.
We had a question at the end of the show on Friday with John Hashek about the Brown Act. As a supervisor, when you have things that need to coordinate with other supervisors, how does the Brown Act help and how does it undermine your ability to communicate?
So California's open meeting law is a really good law, and it does work. It does create, it does put some handcuffs on local elected officials that are not on the state legislators.
What is the restriction there? So for people who aren't in the know.
So for example, a member of the state legislature or a member of Congress, they could talk to every one of their colleagues about the single issue. They could try to round up votes for a bill that they're authoring. In local government in California, you cannot talk to your other colleagues outside of board meetings. Or if you're on a committee with one other member, you can talk to that one other member. So you can never talk to a majority of your members outside of a publicly noticed meeting.
Right. So you on the board can talk to one other person, and that makes it not a quorum or a majority of the board members.
So exactly.
Because we have a five-member board.
Yeah.
Can you bump into each other in town and chat?
Oh, yeah, we could talk, but we can't talk about but we have to be clear that on any one topic that we can't talk to more than one other board member. So, yeah, we could talk socially. We do run into each other in events, but we tend not to have lengthy conversations just because it could easily run back
the
into
the other way.
When
have you ever organized a meeting where it was just specifically to talk about an issue that you can't talk about because of the Brown Act outside of a board meeting?
Well, so all local governments, most of them anyway, will have standing committees, which are agendized publicly noticed meetings, and they will also have what are called ad hoc committees. So they're a single topic and for usually a year or less in time. And so the Board of Supervisors, like many other local governments, has quite a few ad hoc committees where two supervisors are meeting. And in that case, the two can talk at any time on the phone, in person. And so we have quite a few ad hoc committees right now. Currently, we have two different ad hoc committees just on cannabis.
Are you on either of those?
Yeah. So I'm on the, with Supervisor Williams, together we're on the Economic Ad Hoc Committee, Cannabis Committee. And then Supervisors John McCown and John Hashek are on the Cannabis Cultivation Committee. We are independently bringing forward different recommendations to the board. On this Tuesday, Supervisor Williams and I have a proposal to find a way to have the industry pay for an environmental impact report, which will be needed to make some further changes to, in effect, help the cannabis industry. But they would be stepping forward to pay for that environmental document because the county just doesn't have the money.
What are the changes that will be made?
There are, in our meetings that we've been holding, we've heard from quite a few cannabis businesses that there are restrictions that the county has put in place on the number of larger permits that can, which are outside of Mendocino County would be considered small permits that are allowed on any one parcel. And there may be some specific parcels in the county that have access to infrastructure, water, roads, et cetera, that are appropriate that could sustain more cultivation on those sites. And but it would, to do that would take essentially a rezone. And to do that rezone, we would need an environmental clearance. And that environmental clearance is where the bulk of the money is needed to pay for consultants, basically, and a public review process. So that's it's at the request of the industry.
Oh, I see. And then they would, how would that work? Would it be paid for with their fees, or would they just pony up the money?
So they would, a small number of businesses, perhaps 14 or 10 would provide the funds. So they would work together as a group, but it would not be a general tax on all cannabis. It'd be specific businesses that are specifically wanting to expand.
Doesn't that provide them a little bit of an advantage in the policymaking if they're paying for the studies?
Well, it's how much of planning works in California. Huh. So for example, if there was a developer that wanted to rezone a piece of property for housing, normally it's the developer or the landowners that would get together and pay for that planning process. They don't hire the consultant. The county or the city hires the consultant, we're acting as the trust for the public, and it's a public process. But it's not normally the case that the city or the county pays for the planning process when it's benefiting 10 or 5 or 1 parcel.
My guest is 4th District Supervisor Dan Jurdy. We're in the studio today talking about local county politics, and we will be opening the phone lines in just a couple of minutes. You are famously, you have worked on green building in the county, and this year the Board of Supes approved the formation of Mendocino County's new Climate Action Advisory Committee. But before that, you were really the only consistent voice in the county who was working on green energy and green building policy. Can you talk about some of your successes on the green building, green energy front, and how you might see this work fitting into the work of the new climate committee? How does it dovetail with that work, and as we move forward with a comprehensive climate policy conversation?
Sure. Most people realize that a significant amount of greenhouse gases come from buildings, as well as transportation. And so there are fantastic technologies out there to make buildings more energy efficient. Net zero basically means no carbon emissions. It generates as much power sustainably as it consumes throughout the course of a year. And people are already building these buildings throughout America and around the world. And yet, you know, my parents were educators, and I think education's like the key component here. It's really important for that information to get out to the people who are actually building the buildings to understand how they can affordably design and implement buildings like that. And also for the public who are questioning, like, whoa, do I pay a little bit more for my house when it's under construction, or do I save those dollars? And when they can see that it pays off over time, it becomes a value to the consumer. And so the Sonoma Clean Power Authority, which Mendocino County joined, has an education mission, and they are about to open up a storefront in downtown Santa Rosa. As the Board of Supervisors appointee now to that board, I want that to be something that reaches into Mendocino County, because Sonoma Clean Power serves all of Mendocino County except for the city of Ukiah. And I want to make sure that that information that's at their storefront in Santa Rosa reaches the people with like a road show, and hopefully actually also could coordinate with the green building program at Mendocino College. Because again, if people understand what's out there, they're more likely to adopt those technologies.
So, and you sit on the board of Sonoma Clean Power, and there's an education component, but is there also a policy component? Is there something that the county can do policy-wise to encourage or require green building as we move forward?
Certainly. I mean, the California Building Code, though, it is itself statewide ramping up. Statewide, people in the future will be required to build more and more energy efficient buildings. Already, the code's pretty strict, but there are optional things that people could do beyond the code that I think many people would choose to do if only they understood the product was convenient to buy, source, and implement. And so my goal is to get, you know, those products known to the consumers and the people in the building trades.
Have you been working with the county on the county's buildings?
I've been meeting with county staff, and they're going through a process right now, actually, of evaluating all the county buildings. And so the board's allowed me to meet with county staff and participate with county staff and the consultants who are looking at the county buildings.
What are some of the proposals that you're excited about with improving the greenhouse gas emissions and carbon footprint of the county's infrastructure?
Well, we are about to see actually later this week the recommendations from the consultants, so I haven't seen those yet. That meeting's on Thursday. But there are just, you know, both air conditioning units, conventional ones, which the Ukiah buildings all have, or heat pumps are substantially more energy efficient than they were just a few years ago. So just updating some of that basic equipment would dramatically reduce the county's consumption. As Supervisor McCown mentioned earlier in your interview the other day, you know, there's definitely opportunities for the county to put solar canopies over the parking lots. So there's all sorts of options.
That's exciting. And how might this work together with the Citizens Advisory Committee, the Climate Action Advisory Committee?
So we're looking for recommendations from the Climate Action Committee. One of the recommendations that we're going to be looking for is that Sonoma Clean Power, which does serve the county buildings outside of Ukiah, has an optional program that I'm personally enrolled in called their Evergreen Program. And people pay a little bit more in exchange for having 100% renewable energy sourced. It doesn't literally go to your house, but you're adding that to the mix in the system. And
you don't have just perfectly clean power at just your house.
Yeah. So, but it's an alternative to putting solar panels on a building, for example. And so one of the requests that the board has for the Climate Action Committee is to evaluate, is that the most cost-effective way for us to reduce our carbon emissions, or should we go with solar panels, or both? And so I know that the people who are going on that committee will have the expertise to know whether or not, yes, that's a green light from the Climate Action Committee. I'm very grateful for two people who have agreed to serve on. Each supervisor can appoint three. I nominated and the board appointed Marie Jones, who's the City of Fort Bragg's Community Development Director. She's written the Climate Action Plan for the City of Fort Bragg and therefore could bring a lot to the committee. And then Michael Potts, who was one of the original brains behind Real Goods and also is an author on building off-the-grid homes throughout America.
You have one more seat open. Are you still looking for applicants?
I do, and I've been contacted by a number of people, and I still need to complete my interview process.
Got it. All right. This is Alicia Bales. I'm in the studio here with 4th District Supervisor Dan Jurdy, and we are going to open up the phone lines for your calls. The number is 895-2448, and we do have a caller. Caller, you're live on the air.
Hi, this is Joe from Comche, and I want to thank Supervisor Jurdy for his excellent service on the Fort Bragg City Council, and now as on the supervisors, and I have a few questions. One is, I've been told that there is a homelessness emergency assistance program, like HEAP. Do I get that right? And how do I get contact information for that?
So I'd be happy to answer that. Yeah. So the HEAP program is a grant program from the state, and those funds go to an entity in the county, but it's not the county itself. There's throughout California, throughout the nation, there's a continuum of care committee in each community. And so in our case, it consists largely of nonprofit members who are on that board of directors. There is one county employee who has a vote on that committee. And they recently received a large HEAP grant that you're talking about that was over $3 million. The one role of the Board of Supervisors was we had to approve the emergency declaration in order to access that committee, those funds. We wanted to be sure that those funds, as many of those funds as possible, were spent building new housing. We were, particularly Supervisor McCown and I on the board, kind of alerted to the board the fact that we were not able to approve their recommendations, but we could withhold the recommendation, at least temporarily, on declaring the emergency. We did that. City of Fort Bragg did it in a different way, so that we kind of put pressure on that group to make sure that almost all the funds were spent building new housing for homeless people. And so in this particular grant cycle, they allocated the lion's share to a large project, large by Fort Bragg standards, in Fort Bragg, some of which was for homeless housing, some of it for senior veterans, senior citizens, and families, and then some of it will be market rate house, or people who are in the workforce but who can't afford market rate rents. And so that was a very significant project in Fort Bragg. It'll be, I think it's about 60 units altogether. So for Fort Bragg, that's really big. And it also enables a later phase of housing of maybe another 15 units that will probably be market rate units because the infrastructure will be there. So it's a project the City of Fort Bragg was working on for a couple of years, and they needed this little, they needed some incremental funding to draw other funds into that project.
Is it single family homes? Is it an apartment complex? What's it look like?
They are largely attached, like duplex type houses, and there are some detached. But they're mostly rent. The buildings that will be built first will be rentals, but all subsidized.
And owned by the city? Or they?
No, it'll be built by Danko, which operates the cottages next to the police department on Cypress Street in Fort Bragg. They're very popular. In that case, talk about sustainable, those buildings were built with solar panels, so energy efficient that the utility bill on average is about $12 a month. And those are for senior. In that case, those are for exclusively for seniors, and they have a waiting list that's 2 or 3 years long, as you can imagine.
Right, right. Isn't that the impact, or that's how impacted we are in the county? That even when you succeed in creating more housing, the waiting list is so long that people may never have a chance to get in there. But you are doing a lot of work on housing in your district.
More generally, yeah. So we have, I've been working with the Housing Action Team, which is members of the public, including Bree Jones, City of Fort Bragg. It's a program of Healthy Mendocinos, which is part of North Coast Opportunities. And they have an inland group, and I'm part of the coastal group. And we've focused on trying to advocate for changes in public policy and education to the public that would result in more affordable but market rate housing, because there's obviously a very big need there. And so in particular, outside of the cities, but in the cities too, there's more that homeowners and property owners can do to create housing themselves through what's called accessory dwelling units or granny units. And so the City of Fort Bragg has long advocated those, and more of those are being built in the City of Fort Bragg. And we're doing more now in the county to educate the public and make it easier for people to build second units.
Let's get back to that. We have a caller on the line. Oh, missed him. Darn it. Callback caller, 895-2448.
So we do. Our group had a workshop last October in Fort Bragg Town Hall about both what you can do in the city and in the county. And now the county is on the cusp of adopting an ordinance amendment, a local coastal plan amendment, to allow it in the coastal zone on the, which is most but not all of the coast. And so we have a workshop again this October, October 24th. This year it'll be at the Jughandle Farm Education Center. It's a brand new building there, and we'll have representatives from the county and members of the public, myself, explaining what can be done in the county to build accessory dwelling units, and describing the proposal that will be going to the Board of Supervisors on November 5th.
I'm so curious about this accessory dwelling units as a policy toward increasing housing. I mean, it seems like a short-term solution, not a long-term solution. What do you think?
Well, no one solution will solve the whole housing problem. So it's tangible in that the county of Mendocino does not operate a water system or a wastewater system, which is what really is needed to have higher density housing, like an apartment building or condominiums. And so,
you mean outside of city limits?
Outside of city limits, yeah. And so it's really one of the areas, not the only, but it is one of the areas where the county, partly through education and code changes, can encourage more housing to be built. Again, people could build a second unit.
All right. We have another caller. Caller, you're live on the air with Dan Jurdy.
Hi. You were talking about a law for the 10 or 12 or 14 large cannabis grows. I thought spot zoning was illegal, and I don't know where I got that idea, but it seems odd that you could spot zone for just a few. And I will take my answer off the air. Thank you.
So it is true that spot zoning is...
What is spot zoning?
Spot zoning would be if you picked out one... I mean, to take an exaggerated example, would be you'd take a residential neighborhood and said, well, this is a residential neighborhood, but that one parcel is going to have a commercial activity. This is basically allowing more intensified use in a zoning district that already allows it. So it might be, for example, you might have an agricultural zoning or a commercial zoning, and a part... Part of that district, that commercial district, or part of that agricultural district, there would be parcels within it where you're allowing more than is otherwise allowed in that zoning district countywide.
All right. We have another caller. Hi, caller. You're live on the air.
Hello. I'm going to change up the subject matter a little bit here. I was curious on the status of Measure B, which had to do with Hackensport. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Great. Thank you. Anything in particular you wanted to ask about that?
I think it's asked about the status.
The status?
The statuses of it. It did pass, but it's my understanding it's not being enforced.
And the attorney general, the state attorney general, just came back with their non-decision. We were waiting for 2 years for a ruling for them, whether they found that the law was enforceable or not. And they just 2 weeks ago said they can't tell us that because they have a conflict.
Yes. Well, so one of the authors of Measure V is Supervisor Ted Williams, and he's been designated by the board to meet with county staff to bring forward an agenda item. And I personally am hoping that the staff works with him and any legal analysis that they have is disclosed to the public. Sometimes legal information is disclosed to the board in closed session and it's not made public. I think it'd be... good for any information that's disclosed to the board to also be made disclosed to the public as part of that process.
And District 4 is very covered in timber. There's a ton of forest land in your district. How do you feel about Measure V and Hack and Squirt? Have you taken a position on it?
I think people who drink out of well water have a long history in Mendocino County of being against herbicides. I mean, we had the herbicides initiative countywide that was adopted by the voters. It's no surprise to me that it passed with 62%. And I also hope that the people who are using herbicides in the Hack and Squirt technique will be open to hearing that from the public, that 62% of the public did vote that way. And we did hear at a recent board meeting, Mendocino Redwood came forward and said that they are discussing and open to discussing with Supervisor Williams their management plans and ever the optimist, I'm hoping that they will come forward with some sort of modification of how they're practicing, implementing that practice in Mendocino County.
Well, it's also come to light, not even recently. I mean, they've been talking about it, but I don't think that we really took it, really got it, that they're also using Hack and Squirt and the state forest in Jackson State.
I just recently learned that too. Yeah.
So that might be the reason why the state attorney general thought they had a conflict.
I know that Supervisor Williams expressed that, and that may be the case. I mean, why they did not, because it was our understanding that the attorney general's office would be issuing an opinion.
And so, as of right now, the status of Measure V is that it's not being enforced.
The, Again, I think the I really would like staff to speak to this issue in a public session.
You can't talk about it?
Well, I mean, what they've told us in closed session is there's no easy way to implement it.
Oh. And so, then people have been talking about a fear of a lawsuit from MRC or do you share that concern?
They did give us a letter some time ago that cited two different laws, both county ordinance and state law, that would indicate, according to their attorney, that it was not enforceable.
Uh-huh. So they're still doing hack and squirt out there on their hundreds of thousands of acres. Let's give out the phone lines once again, 895-2448. Dan Durdy is here in the studio, ready to take your calls with questions and comments. Let's talk a little bit about PG&E and the upcoming PSPSs, the Public Safety Power Shutoffs. You talked about, we'll put a pin in that one for a second. We've got a caller. Hey, caller, you're live on the air.
Hi, this is Randy from Comp-Chi, although today I'm in Ukiah. I'm parked at the new electric car charging stations right here in downtown Ukiah. So I'm excited to report that they're finally live as of today. And I just wanted to ask Supervisor Durdy, you know, you're on the Sonoma Clean Power Board and very mindful of our need to move to, you know, clean ways to move ourselves around and take care of the climate. What more can the county do to encourage the use of electric vehicles and particularly charging stations?
Absolutely. So Sonoma Clean Power just issued a press release. You've probably been covered here on KZUX, announcing that they secured a grant. They have matching funds they're providing, but they secured a grant from the Public Utilities Commission. I think it's $6 million for additional charging stations in Sonoma and Mendocino counties. The Countywide Transportation Planning Board, which I'm also a member of, appointed by first by the City Council, now by the Board of Supervisors, we've been working on trying to help identify the best places to put charging stations so that they're not too many stations in one area and not enough in another area of the county. And so there's been a lot of planning going on, and now you're seeing more and more implementation of those plans. So I think we will be seeing more charging stations. I would love to see some charging stations at more public buildings, such as county buildings. So both for the public to use when they show up for a meeting or for members of the staff to charge their cars.
So what was the process for getting the charging stations up and running that just started up today in Ukiah?
So I'm not sure which ones he's talking about, because there's been some renovations at some of the older charging stations that they've upgraded the technology. That may be the case there. You know, Tesla has actually put in some stations. They have their own proprietary throughout the county.
It's too bad those don't have adapters for everybody.
Yeah, I believe the Tesla drivers have an adapter to use conventional, but not the other way around, because in that case, Tesla, that company, is actually paying to put those in.
Because we don't have four-wheel drive Teslas rolling around on the dirt roads here in the county, I don't think.
They make a sport utility, but I'm not sure if it's four-wheel drive or not.
Uh-huh. But so how practical is that for Mendocino County residents to use electric vehicles?
I think it's becoming more and more practical, because as the range of electric cars are expanding over time, even the less expensive electric cars are having the range needed. You do need to have at least a level 2 charging. So level 1 would be like your 120 volt in your house. And that would take, you know, overnight. You still aren't going to fully charge your car if it was down to 5%. But if you have a level 2 or above, then you could charge and pretty much get around the whole county in most cases.
And what are the levels of the charging stations that have been opened?
The charging stations you see in the public areas, I believe, are mostly level 2s. Tesla has something level 3 plus, you might call it. It's even faster. The level 3s are substantially more expensive to install, so you generally see level 2 chargers, which, again, could give you a good charge to get you back home, probably, let's say, from shopping.
Where are they?
They're all around the county. So state parks received a grant a few years ago. They've installed about, I think it was 14 different locations. Almost all were at state parks on the coast, because that's where most of the state parks are located. They did include in that, it was administered by Mendocino Land Trust. They did include a charging station, I believe, in Willits, and maybe one in Ukiah as part of that grant program. That was a couple years ago. And like I said, there's actually, visit Mendocino, the website for the County Tourism Commission. They actually maintain a really good web page that shows where all the charging stations. So when people have asked me that question, that's where I usually send them, is I would look at the visitmendocino.com website. They have a page that has a pretty accurate map of where all the existing charging stations are located and where the future stations are likely to go in the next couple of years.
And so you said Sonoma Clean Power is going to be just got a grant to build more of these stations. Is it kind of like a patchwork of different operators?
It is. I mean, it's there's actually private companies that have put in some. I mean, it usually with grants. And it's not a unified system, but I believe most people that have electric cars, they have apps on their phones and they can find these things.
Wow. All right, we have another caller. Welcome, caller.
Hi,
you're live on the air.
Just wanted to let you know the chargers I think he was calling about are the four chargers that are near the old post office in Ukiah at Stanley and Oak. And that was a deal with Tesla. Tesla paid, and the city took 4 years to do it. But I just want to give a shout-out to Steve Scalmanini for staying on it and making it happen, because we have an electric car. We're off-grid, and it's nice in the winter to have an alternative to our 120-volt slow charge, which gives you about 3 miles in an hour. So,
whoa. Do you know where every charging station in the county is because you have an electric vehicle?
Do I know what?
Do you have a good sense of where every charging station is?
Well, we use the one in Elk. You can plug in at the Stanford Inn, but it's a little pricey. I think they charge $6 an hour, but it's a nice courtesy if you're stuck. I don't know if there's other ones in Mendocino. That'd be good to know, but... And maybe Dan could say where those charging stations are on the coast. I know about the ones in Elk and Point Arena, and I remember where else they are. But and there's a couple at Costco. I think it's 14 cents a kilowatt hour there, and it's 1 cent at the one in Ukiah. There's still the free one that, you know, will always be probably occupied, but then there's the four new ones, so there's five together. I don't know if they're going to keep the free one there or not. Hopefully they will, because we'll eventually need five. The Teslas have eight, and a lot of times I'll see six or eight cars plugged in there. Not all the time, but I think they're for people traveling long distance, like up to the Redwoods up north, up to Arcata, Eureka up that way. And it's probably a nice stopping point for them to get a few hundred more miles on their cars.
Well, thanks for the information, Bill. Good to hear from you. Up in Laytonville, there's an array of charging stations that were recently installed, and I think some are both Tesla and some are not Tesla, so just for all other electric cars. And that was an intended, because obviously it's a northern jumping off point towards Humboldt. But yeah, again, I think if anybody has an electric car, I would definitely recommend, or thinking of buying one, I would recommend that they look at the Visit Mendocino map of Mendocino County, because it shows where they are and where they're proposed to go in the next couple of years.
And is it free? Is it like a gas station where you have to pay for the electricity? And who provides the electricity?
So I think, as Bill mentioned, many of them you do pay, and you can subscribe to a system where you pay. I'm not sure exactly how it works, but they know who you are, and you're paying to use their...
Just like iTunes.
Yeah.
So... That's interesting that they're putting in these electric charging stations. In terms of a PG&E power shutoff, do those go down too?
Well, if PG&E shuts off the power, everybody loses it. In fact, people who have solar panels will lose it unless they can switch off the grid, in which most people don't have that capacity. Although, as battery systems become cheaper, I'm sure more people will adopt that technology.
And so that I was really interested. We were talking before the show about the relationship between Sonoma Clean Power and PG&E. And even though we do have a local utility that's made of Mendocino and Sonoma counties, and we have, you know, more green power than PG&E provides, we're still vulnerable to, we still use their grid. So even though we have our own utility, we're going to be shut off too.
So the way the state has set up the system is they allowed local communities through their local governments to bulk purchase power with the intent that it would be cleaner power and at a competitive rate. And so Sonoma County, you know, thankfully to our south, they looked into this. They developed a system. We have since joined them. That's why it's called Sonoma Clean Power. And I'm now on their board, and we're looking at Lake County's now talking about joining Sonoma Clean Power. And maybe someday the name will change. But basically, the way it works is when you look at your bill, you're still billed from PG&E, because PG&E is over half of the bill is going to PG&E to not just handle the billing, but also to maintain all the power lines and this network of system. It's really, it's the bulk purchasing of the source of the power that's the part that goes to Sonoma Clean Power, or in Marin's case, their Marin version of it.
And you're on the board of Sonoma Clean Power, so where does the power come from?
They buy power from the geysers. They buy power from solar panel. People have large solar arrays. I believe there was one just opened up in Mendocino County. I think it was in Willits area that was under contract from Sonoma Clean Power. Their network of power, the default, I believe it's 80% carbon free as the default, and that if you optionally, like I have, joined their Evergreen program, then it's 100% not just carbon free, but it's also local renewable sources. So like the solar panel array versus a hydro dam someplace, which would be carbon free but not local and not renewable under state guidelines.
So even Potter Valley project that doesn't qualify for the Evergreen,
that program would not, yeah.
Because hydroelectric isn't considered renewable?
In California, hydro is not considered renewable.
Oh, California is really a leader and quite visionary.
When it's green, it's truly green.
It's not killing fish.
Well, there are micro hydros that might be considered renewable in California. I'm not sure about that. But yeah.
All right. The number to call in the studio is 895-2448. This is Alicia Bales. I'm in the studio with Supervisor Dan Jurdy of the 4th District. Lines are open for your calals. And it's 11:47, so we've got about 10 more minutes. So if you have a question or a comment for the supervisor, you can call 895-2448.
Maybe we could talk a little bit about mental health services.
Yes, please.
So the League of Women Voters, which is primarily on the coast, I'm working with them to organize a panel about mental health services on the Mendocino Coast and implementation of Measure B. That workshop is going to be on the 17th. I believe it's at 6 p.m. at the Casper Community Center. And more publicity will be going out about that. They're going to be discussing the panel, which I'll be a part of. We'll be discussing what services are on the coast right now, what services are likely to come online, either just through reforms in the system itself or funded by Measure B. Because the good news is that we've had significant reforms in our mental health system in Mendocino County in the last couple of years that have really provided new services and better services, so that we're in a better position now that we have this extra sales tax to implement additional services from Measure B. I think we have reason to be optimistic that we'll actually get good services through this additional funding source.
All right, we have a call. Hey, caller, you're live on the air.
Hi, this is John Schaefer. I was just listening to the program driving from Ukiah in my Tesla, and you were asking about charging stations. I just thought I'd point out that at the Solar Living Center, we have Tesla charging stations and then regular car charging stations. And then across the street at Olivino, Terrasavia, they've got both Tesla and non-Tesla charging stations. But just to point out the differences that your listeners may not know, when I charge the car at home using solar and hydropower, because I'm completely off the grid, it puts in about 17 miles for every hour of charge. When I charge it at Real Goods, it puts in 27 miles every hour of charge. And when I charge it at the supercharger in Ukiah, it puts like 400 miles for every hour of charge. So just to give people a kind of an idea, it's a long process to charge it off solar, but you get the wonderful feeling of knowing you're not using any fossil fuels whatsoever. But the chargers at the Solar Living Center are almost always open, that people are free to use anytime they come by. So that's my comment.
All right. Thanks for that. Do we have another call? No. Okay. Caller, call back, 895-2448.
And that's great to know, because Hopland is the entry point for many people, at least coming from the Bay Area into Mendocino County. And so it's an obvious spot to stop and charge your car.
I wonder if they have a nice hangout there where you can have some tea or a chai or something. Hi, caller. You're live on the air.
Hi. Yes, I want to also thank Dan for his service. But and there is a charging station at the Casper Community Center, which is basically free. And we have little donation envelopes if you feel so moved.
Wow, wonderful. So just as much as people feel like they can donate?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Or not. You know, if they can't.
Thanks for reminding people. Yeah, that actually might be one of the charging stations that was brought in from the State Parks grant. There's actually a little known state park in Casper called the Casper Headlands. And but I'm not certain that that's one of the charging stations brought by the State Parks grant, but it may be.
And is there another call? All right, caller, you're live on the air.
Hi. Briefly, while all the work you're doing for housing for homeless people is very important, there are unsheltered people today and tomorrow and next week and next month. And what's sadly lacking in this county and particularly on the coast is a temporary shelter for everyone who needs it until they can get housing. So what we need is some homelessness action and a homeless action team and movement on that. So please comment on that.
Yeah, there are people in Mendocino County who are focusing quite a bit on homeless services. As I mentioned, there's the continuum of care, and they're now receiving new funds from the state to develop housing for people specifically who are currently homeless. There's a shortage of all kinds of housing in Mendocino County.
It seems like it's a precarious situation for housing in Mendocino County. We have another call. Hey, caller, you're live on the air.
Good morning. This is Dorothea Dormline. Well, we're really good in Redwood Valley at providing housing for people's stuff. Take a look at what the planning department okayed on what seems to have been an under-the-table deal to build a gigantic storage center for people's stuff. And, you know, why can't we, you know, in the days of logging, they had logging camps and bunk beds, and they shelter for people. And today, I think it's regulations. We have so many petty rules that have been followed for this and that, for permanent housing, that we have no housing at all. But we got lots of housing for the stuff. Go take a look at what the planning department okayed for downtown Redwood Valley. I think it's a disgrace.
Well, thank you for that call, Dorothea. And that does bring up a question about all of these meetings and workshops and municipal advisory councils, and yet something like Redwood Valley with the MAC there, who did years of work to talk about how their community would be designed and, you know, how downtown would look. And then a box was checked from the planning and building department, and suddenly they have a storage unit in the middle of town. What meaningful role can constituents have with local governments that where you guys will actually listen to the input and make good use of it?
Well, that would be a case of where nobody made a suggestion to, let's say, in that case, prohibit storage units in the downtown core of Redwood Valley. Had that recommendation come forward, it might have been adopted. But apparently nobody thought of that. And then
think of every contingency plan.
It's hard to think of every contingency plan. I do want to go back to the housing issue. We have a call, but I want to go back to building small units and the way that people can now do it in Mendocino County where they couldn't in the past.
Yeah. Hello, caller. You're live on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question. It ultimately relates to individual disaster recoveries. It seems like we have plenty of disasters, and people don't think about this until it lands on them. But first of all, if the supervisor could say anything that what he knows about this body of law, that guides the planning department, the ordinances. It seems to me, I've heard that there's like an international body, and then the state gets involved, and then the county, I'm not sure how much leeway the county has when it comes to adopting or rejecting those ordinances. Just as a general question, it seems to be contrary to American ideas of liberty. I've had the impression that one couldn't actually legally wipe one's bottom without permission from the planning department. And it came to me particularly when I lost my home in a fire, and the catch 22 was the word on the street was that you could live in a travel trailer while you're rebuilding. But the fine print that nobody mentioned was that you had to have a permit to do this, and the permit was tied to having an active building permit for the residents. Well, we had several issues. We were in no position to apply for the building permit for the new house immediately, but we needed housing immediately. And we wound up having all, you know, we wasted a couple of years fighting with apparently some of the neighbors' complaints. And that's another thing that's inequitable about the system, is that there's more ordinances than they can actually enforce. So they're a complaint-driven organization, which is a hell of a way to run a county. But I guess my basic question is there any thought being given to being more compassionate to people who suffered a disaster and are trying to get back on their feet and need a place to live in the meantime, and especially for people like us who had a one-off disaster, personal disaster, instead of a big fire that takes out thousands of homes, and then they bend the rules a little bit for them.
All right.
I'd like those supervisors' comments on that.
Okay, so I'd like to go, answer that. So in Mendocino County, like most local jurisdictions, it's not legal to have an RV or a camper and someone living in a single-family residential neighborhood. It is complaint-driven in terms of county enforcement. So, of course, there are hundreds of people living throughout the county on those. But when the fire disaster struck in October 2017, shortly thereafter, the county amended its ordinance to say that victims of the fire could, they or their contractor could live on their property or someone else's property in Mendocino County for up to 3 years while the rebuild was taking place. I believe the caller was referencing a personal disaster was not associated with that fire. I totally agree. At the time that we adopted this, I said, you know, my guess is we're not going to experience lots of complaints. I have not heard complaints about people living in contractors or individuals who were fire victims living in a camper for, you know, 3 years after the fire. I think that anyone who suffers a personal disaster, you know, fire burn down or whatever it is, should be allowed to live for 3 years in a camper. And I'd be happy to vote to amend the current ordinance to extend it to anyone who suffers an individual disaster that he described.
All right. Well, we have 30 seconds left. Do you think we should try to take one more quick comment?
Sure.
All right. Hey, caller, you're on the air. You've got 30 seconds. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Okay, just following up on what a previous caller said. Hello?
Hello? Yeah, you have about 15 seconds left.
That we really do need to take some action on temporary shelter for homeless people, people who are unsheltered now, and housing and trailers and, I mean, why can't we have a place where people can live in a tent or where they can live in a trailer? The continuum of care people are good-hearted, but we're not really seeing things happen very quickly. So that
all
was
right.
Just,
thank you for that. That'll be our last word for the show today. So Dan Jurdy, I want to thank you very much for coming into the studio. We've been talking with Dan Jurdy, 4th District Supervisor for Mendocino County. And thanks to Rich Culbertson for working the board and phone lines. And most of all, thanks to you listeners for listening and calling in.